If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
Hello, hello, you can't. Well, fans, I'm not slagging you. I'm not calling you a bloody cunt. I'm not calling you that word. The C Ward, the Stena Line Ferry, the Sea Cat. Remember that? There was a big boat and everyone was calling it a cat. I was like, yeah, but where's its lovely cat face is what I'd like to know. Where's its tail? Anyway, look, how's things? I'm just back from France. And I'm going to be giving you a full recap on that next recap. Hello. That's what I want. That's what I say when I'm in a cafe and I want another cup of tea. I said, hey, bitch. No, I say, hey, sir, can I get a recap? Game of Thrones recap. No, look, how are you doing? No, listen. So I'm going to give you a recap on France next week on the pod. Tell you about all my holly bops. But right now I'm in my fucking car again. I'm in my car again. Daddy Yankee, me, is between studios at the moment. But listen, this is actually just an introduction to my guest on the pod today. I had my very good pal, Fergal Costello, on the pod. BAFTA award-winning director, bruv. Fergal Costello, who is very busy. He's shooting Nova Jones in the BBC. He's shooting The Family Pile, a new comedy. And he's got his brand new flick, a feature-length flick. He directed me, you might remember, in a short flick. It's the more important one. Something Doesn't Feel Right, the horror flick that we did together. But he's got a brand new flick coming out, We Are Not Alone. And it's very exciting. He showed me things he wasn't told me actually not to say that he showed me. But it looks great, and I'm very excited. And we chat today about the summer blockbusters 2022. And we talk a little bit about the kind of state of film at the moment. And we come at it from different ways. We come at it different hot takes. But to be fair, it is just two white guys having a fairly standard chat about films. But hey, if you like that, I like that. I listen to a lot of podcasts like that. That's what this pod is. So I was delighted to be chatting to Fergal on this. But before we get on to that, do you like whiskey, man? Do you like whiskey? Well, can I recommend the sponsor of this week's podcast? The Dubliner Irish Whiskey. Look, if you like whiskey, and you like whiskey that doesn't take itself too serious. I mean, they probably wouldn't want me telling you that, but I mean, they're very serious, you know, good employers, they make a fine product, fine distribution. What I'm talking about is not all that snooty shite, man. You're not walking into some place and trying to read off some tiny chalkboard. Yeah, £12 for a whiskey to taste like fire. And there's, yeah, lava. Yeah, I didn't want to taste it. Oh, no, that's meant to be a, guess what, a good whiskey tastes like. It's meant to make you cough. Well, I don't like that shit. I want a nice, tasty, accessible whiskey. That's just my personal preference. Again, these are not the words of copy. They don't give me any copy to read. This is straight off the top of the dome. I like a nice, tasty whiskey that doesn't take itself so seriously. It tastes good. It tastes like an Irish whiskey should. Yet, with the Dubliner, what they do is they fucking jazz it up a little bit. Sometimes they put it in a bourbon cask and make it taste like a bit like bourbon. Irish with a bit of hint of the Wild Wild West. Sometimes they mix it and make it taste like a honeycomb liqueur, like you're sucking down on a tasty crunchy. Sometimes they throw a lot of spices in it. Star anise, fucking little red round thing. What's that little one? Looks like a stick. All that mad stuff. And a bit of orange. Makes it taste like a tasty old fashioned, like you're having the whole cocktail to yourself. Not to yourself, drink responsibly. But look, they do some wild and fun things straight out of the heart of the Liberties. That is the Dubliner Irish Whiskey. The DLD.com is where you can find them. Or in Dún Stores, man. They're also there on the shelves of Dún Stores. But anyway, look. I'm chatting about the summer blockbusters with my good pal Fergal Costello. This is 2022 Summer Blockbuster Roundup. Oh, and heavy spoilers for everything, I think. I don't quite remember if we spoil anything, but just in case we do, I don't think we give any warning. So if we're talking about a film and you haven't seen that film, maybe skip ahead a little bit. Maybe skip ahead. And also, hey, if you like these kind of movie chats, I do full movie reviews over on patreon.com/Tony Cantwell for the bonus podcast for the price of a pint a month every single month. I'm not trying to lock you in straight away, but for however long you're interested. I do a full length review of The Batman. The next one I have coming up is The Empire Strikes Back. Star Wars, did all the prequels, did A New Hope. Empire Strikes Back is coming up soon.
And whenever I see movies, I think Top Gun, I did a whole one on the original Top Gun over there. So you can check that out. Anyway, look, enough me selling things. Listen to this. This is 2022 Summer Blockbuster Roundup. Enjoy. All the best. Bye-bye. Fergal, thanks very much for having me on the pod.
Yeah, no problem, man. Yeah. I thought I'd throw you a bone, you know.
No, I appreciate it, brother. No, it's great to have you on, man. Will I talk about you? I mean, are you happy to talk about what you're up to at the moment and what thing bits you're doing?
Yeah. All good. Yeah, no, just I'm kind of halfway through the shoot of it's a 7-week shoot for a new sitcom that's, I think it's been vaguely announced. That's coming out on ITV next year. So it's with Hattrick, which is mad because they made Father Ted and Derry Girls. So we're kind of, we're just we're literally in the battle zone of filming now. It's relentless and a marathon, but lovely, great cast. Like, and it's been really, really enjoyable so far.
And your flick, where's your flick at the moment?
I know when it's coming out, but I'm not allowed to say yet. And I saw the teaser poster yesterday and I fucking nearly cried. It was crazy. I was like, oh my God, it's like a Drew Struzan poster. We Are Not Alone is coming out this year and towards the end of the year. I'll say that.
I am very excited to see it. What have you thought about 2022 as a year of films so far? I mean, the main ones we've already seen. Obviously, we haven't seen Jordan Peele's Nope yet, which I think
can't wait for that.
I feel like that could be in my top three already, even having not seen it. It seems exactly right up my street.
Yeah, I went to the cinema over the weekend and I saw the trailer for that, and I was like, God, that just looks like my shit. I cannot wait for that. I love Kaluuya. I love Daniel Kaluuya in anything anyway. But them together, I think they have this kind of weird alchemy together. They really suit each other.
It's a shame he's not going to be in Black Panther 2.
Yeah, I wonder why that is, actually. Yeah, I'm sure it's a narrative reason, because I think Ryan Coogler is a fucking amazing filmmaker. Mm. Creed is still one of my favorite sports movies ever.
I think it's the best Rocky film, hands down.
Nah, come on, Rocky 2. Rocky 2, man.
Rocky 2?
Yeah, he beats Apollo. Spoilers. Yeah.
Fuck.
And it has two montages. It has two running montages. More than Rocky has.
That's true. It does have many montages. I don't know. Shit. I don't even know if I've seen it I've seen it in my child brain. Watched it on ITV when I was like 7. But I haven't seen it in my adult brain.
I had it on VHS and it was one of my go-to. Like I say, if I had a rugby match or whatever, like the night before, I'd watch Rocky 2 and I'd be like, I'm a champion. I'd feel great going into the match.
Yeah. I will. I do have to check it out. Someone I saw it listed on a friend of mine's podcast. He started referring to it as like the third best action movie of all time, and I'm like, you can't call that an action movie.
Rocky 2?
Really, yeah.
No, it's a sports drama.
I know, that's exactly it. But he's like, no, action's action. When there's a serious amount of action happening, he says you can't call an argument. You know, there's no argument for calling it a sports movie. Anyway, look, looking for this year, right? You're the man I like to talk to about the blockbusters. Future Hall of Famer, future IFTA Hall of Famer, BAFTA Award winning director Fergal Costello, future IFTA nominee.
Yeah. No, I didn't win. No, I didn't get it.
But with Hollywood likely knocking in the next couple of years, I do like your box office, summer blockbuster takes. You're a very articulate man. You've also got a very good taste for fringe flicks. Really, decent horror flicks, but also the cheesiest stuff, the purposely bad stuff, the blockbusters. You watch it all, you absorb it all.
Yeah, love it.
I do always want to get your take. So look, let's look at maybe the start of this year. What was your, how did you feel about Robert Eggers? The Northman.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I actually did think it was. I thought it was really good. I in the cinema, I thought it was really cool, and I loved some parts of it in particular. I thought this is really awesome, but I definitely was left a bit cold by it. I didn't really care about Amleth, the main character. I thought he was a bit of a dick.
Big time.
I mean, that's kind of the point. He's a proper barbarian and he's barbaric in his actions. And I love the twists and stuff like that. I love the journey of Nicole Kidman's character. But I thought I admired it way more than I really enjoyed it. Do you know what I mean? I was like, that was really cool. Rather than I was completely engaged in it
totally,
as a film and a story.
I totally get what you mean. You know? I was kind of thinking afterwards, I was like, I mean, it got probably very incorrectly linked with Gladiator and Braveheart, but it's absolutely nothing like either one of those. I mean, maybe bar the fact that the kind of swords and kind of maybe some degree of setting, even though it's not even the same type of setting as Braveheart. But I was like, the fact that I was so warm on them and a bit cold, as you said, on this, I was kind of thinking, is there something wrong with me? Am I now like just used to a complete Hollywood ending, and maybe is it that kind of style?
Yeah.
But I don't think it does have the chops up to those caliber of flicks. I do think personally, very hot take and very unpopular opinion, that Braveheart is a better flick than Gladiator.
Yeah, that's wrong. But
sure.
No, I thought it was like the Northman. I'm going to get very nerdy on you. It reminded me most, there's a Russian film called Come and See. It's a Russian war movie about the kind of eradication of the farmlands as the Germans were making their way into Russia. And it's an absolutely harrowing film. But I thought stylistically, and a lot of the battle sequences, particularly the end of Come and See, was very reminiscent of the first big raid in The Northman. And I thought that was kind of what he was getting some of his... It felt like that. It felt the same way at that. Like, where Come and See is like a really powerful, harrowing experience, but it's not an emotional one. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I thought The Northman was kind of similar. It was really well told, really. And I loved its embracing of myth, where him picking up a sword off a dead guy, in his mind, was a great epic battle with this kind of statuesque, golem. And I loved all that stuff. I loved those flights of fancy it took. But I just found it hard to engage with, fully, emotionally. I didn't really care when happened at the end happened. I was like, well, he kind of deserves it.
He does, you know, especially from like 20 minutes in, you see the raid and you're like, this is badass and this is cool. And, you know, it's metal as shit. But then you're like, oh, well, they're burning everybody alive.
Yeah, and they're shoving women and kids into the house and burning it. And he's just staring at it happening. You're like, here's
the
hero.
And you're still with the character. Like, there's no turn. That's not a heel turn. It's just like, he just looks at it. And maybe there's some remorse, or maybe there's a level of like, this is a kid who just got caught up in a bad crowd. But you're also like, there kind of is no redemption after that, you know?
I like the way the guy he wanted to kill was actually not the worst person.
Yeah, I know. And it actually it turns out to be quite likable, and all he wanted was his son's fucking heart back. I loved all the Norse mythology stuff. I know you're a huge fan. I know you're particularly excited about God of War, Ragnarok. Yeah. But I loved all the the Tree of Life imagery. I thought that looked really striking. Reminded me a lot about of the Fountain, that, you know, Darren Aronofsky's that kind of visual style. And you see the Valkyrie, which just looked fucking incredible.
Yeah, and riding into Valhalla at the end.
And riding into Valhalla, the final battle at Hell. And they're all in the fucking
That was class.
In a volcano. Like, incredible. But yeah, it did leave me a bit cold. It did leave me a bit cold as well. I personally would give it... What's your normal rating on films, Fergal? Or do you not give number ratings?
I know, I did. I was only talking about this on the set today. We're rating stuff out of five. I'm a big out of five, man.
Like, I'm an out of five, man.
Yeah, I would have given it like a really strong three. Do you know what I mean?
Really strong three.
Yeah, like nearly. Like, I mean, the 3.8 kind of thing. Like, so near a four.
Sure.
I was just watching it. I was passive watching it rather than like participatory in it. I felt. You know,
I get you.
Admiring get you. It from a filmmaking standpoint.
I give very high reviews for films that I think are like. I did really like it. I still thought it was incredible. And it felt really massive, but I suppose you're right. I suppose I didn't really care that much about him, but I still gave it a 4 out of 5, but now I'm reconsidering.
Nice. No. Oh, no.
No, I'll stick with my 4.5. all right, coming after that was The Batman. I know you were super hyped about this. You were messaging me in the middle of the night about this. What did you make of Matt Reeves' The Batman?
I thought it was class. Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome. I went with my partner, and we went on like a Friday afternoon because I was going to go to midnight, but then I couldn't go. So I gave it to the ticket to my mate. So we went to like 2 p.m. on a Friday, and I hadn't told her it was 3 hours. You know, kind of, and she was like, "Oh, it's a silly Batman movie," and she fucking like hated it. She like really? Hated it. She took like 2 phone calls in the middle of it, didn't care. She was outside. I think she missed like cumulatively about 40 minutes of the whole thing. But like, I thought it was, I'm a hardcore fan of the comics, and like, and the Detective Batman is my favorite iteration of Batman. And also year two Batman is my favorite iteration of Batman in the comics. So it was just like, I was just like kind of in heaven basically the entire movie. And it was, I loved the dark aesthetic it had with like Greg Fraser's cinematography and the production design. It felt like something like Blade Runner. They really created a sense of place that was really strong. And I thought he was amazing. I thought he was amazing Batman, but he wasn't really Bruce Wayne yet. You know?
I really liked that. I liked how tall he was as well. Like, I liked how he was towering over everyone. Like, Pattinson's like 6'4", maybe 6'1", or whatever. And I liked just seeing, like, it looked so jarring. You know, he goes to the first crime scene. He's dressed as Batman. He's just taller than everyone. He's just walking around.
Yeah,
I
love the fact.
He was scary, yeah. And, like, I like the fact that he acknowledges, like, there's a level of campiness that, like, Matt Reeves seemed to get just right, where it's like, yeah, he is wearing the eye makeup. Like in other films, it's like fucking, you know, Michael Keaton takes his mask off and no, there's like his eyes are just completely clean, you know, there's no eye makeup. But he's walking around, and I like the fact that he's like, they double down. Because if you really think about it, Burton and Nolan don't have a lot of Batman in the bat suit walking around. This was like all, even Schumacher has a little bit, but it's Batman and Robin, unfortunately. Yeah. But this is like Batman only wanting to be Batman in the bat suit the whole time, only goes as Bruce Wayne when he's essentially Batman in disguise trying to get to
at
a funeral.
He was scoping people. Like, that was so cool. And I loved like that, like you were saying, when he's Batman, he arrives at the Iceberg Lounge and he knocks on the front door. It's not like, he's not creeping in. It's like, he's like, hey, I want to talk to the Penguin. You know,
and then
he used to beat his way in, which is so cool. And I thought she was absolutely fantastic. I thought she nearly stole the entire movie, Zoe Kravitz.
I thought she was like, I mean, she's completely captivating. But like, I don't know, like I said on my podcast previously that I thought that it was the best Catwoman, but I do think Michelle Pfeiffer actually is like doing something. Like, you know,
That's one of my favorite screen performances ever is Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns.
Because she's just totally, and it's one of those like Christopher Reeve, you know, Clark Kent Superman things where it's like you get two completely different characters and someone just leaning so heavy into each one. So I was a bum steer, or that was a bad take on me. But I did think Zoe Kravitz is like utterly captivating. And I thought they had incredible, like probably the best kind of like.
They had heat.
You know. The heat, it was fucking hot as fuck. Like, you know,
well, they're both ridiculously good looking. So, but I could feel it though. I could feel like the best Batman comics, the best Catwoman Batman relationship in the books is always written as if they just wanted to fucking tear the suits off. And like Batman has the whole she's from the wrong side of the tracks thing. And she's like, you know, oh, he's a bit of posh. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. I loved, there's two things that I really loved and would have wanted to see, I'd like to see more of, right? One, I wish the whole flick was him with the, you know, him narrating the whole thing. I love that. Yeah. The first 15 minutes of that where it's his diary entry and, you know, they're all looking up and they're afraid of the bat signal.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, like it's just, and then he puts, like in a very like neat kind of way, they block this off to be like, oh, well, this is his diary from this, you know, experiment of his second year of trying this Batman thing, you know. I love that. You realized, oh, that's the thing that's kind of been missing from Batman movies that you exclusively get in the comics is that inner monologue.
It's ubiquitous. Yeah, exactly. It's just completely omnipresent in the comics. It's like, it doesn't work without the inner monologue, you know.
No. It's something that actually, like, Sherlock Holmes tried to steal, you know, with the Robert Downey Jr. movie. Like, that was, there's scenes in that where he's all like, left rib broken, right, what I need to do here is use the weight of this man to kind of over, you know, and that's always a really Miller. Like, especially in Hush, that's like, there's a great bit in that where he's like getting the shit kicked out of him and he's like, you know, calculating every single thing. I also loved the fact that it's him getting everything wrong, you know, or getting some things wrong, like not being able to start up the Batmobile is great, him botching the wingsuit, you know. Just getting wrapped up in the Riddler's plan as well. Like, he's just essentially just caught. Like, it's that's another thing though. It's a captivating detective film, but it isn't a good detective story. It's an on rails and then this happens and then this happens and then this happens kind of detective journey. But it's not. I don't know if it's a. There's no eureka moment that I'm like, oh fuck.
Yeah, that'd be like my one thing I didn't like, and it's just because I'm a mark for Batman. It's like he didn't outsmart the Riddler.
No,
do you know what I mean? Which was like, I thought, because all the best Batman stories, he always like right at the very end, he's like, oh no, I'm smarter than you know what I mean? And it's like, no, I'm the Batman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But even the Riddler at the end, where he's all like, he gets it wrong. He thinks he's Bruce Wayne, and then he reveals, oh, he's, and then he's like, oh, so the Riddler's what, stupid? Like, you know, at the end. Also, I wasn't mad on that. I don't know if I think Paul Dano had a read on that character, especially when I hear stories like he had to do like 200 takes of that phone scene. And I totally get that that's, you know, it's him directing it, shooting it himself and doing his performance. And I know what it's like to have 500 fucking unused drafts, a stupid idea on your phone. But it's usually because I don't have a full read on what I'm going to do, and I don't think Paul Dano had a full read on
That's interesting, yeah, because I thought like probably one of the best scenes in the movie is when your man had the bomb strapped to his neck, and the phone is just ringing for like 12 hours or whatever.
Yeah, that's great.
And you just know that Edward is just waiting the entire time, and then when he answers, he's not angry. He's like, "Oh, you answered," you know, doing this.
Yeah.
I thought when the mask came off, he was just a bit, I was like, oh, Grant, he's just a nerd, which he is.
Yeah, we've seen that. Yeah, I know, we've seen that. Like then when the mask came off, we're in, what is it, Prisoners, you know, or...
Yeah, Blackgate, yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah, Prisoners, sorry, yeah.
And then also what I really would have dug as well is like, there's a bit where like, you know, Andy Serkis, who works hard, but doesn't really have anything to do as this
sexy
kind of...
Sexy Alfred.
Sexy Alfred, you know. I think if we're going for young Alfreds, you know, for me, it's Jeremy Irons. I think was a fucking savage Alfred. I wish, you know,
yeah,
you know, it's a shame that didn't pan out for him.
The worst iteration of Batman ever.
The worst iteration.
Oh my god, nightmare! It's like I thought I was like dreaming watching Batman vs Superman in the cinema when he's riddling lads with the Batmobile. I was like, this is insanity.
Yeah, and he's like branding boys.
Yeah, but he's literally shooting the machine guns, going, oh, yeah. You know. Like, yeah. It's so anti-Batman. It's like,
yeah, no, it is. I think, I don't know, I have this kind of soft spot for Ben Affleck. Just because I know that he's a comic geek and I know he really wanted to do like a The Batman movie, and I actually think that probably would have been, it would have been something, you know? But anyway, something else that annoyed me about this was, right, like Andy Serkis kind of talks down to him like a kid at a certain point, you know? I would have loved Commissioner Gordon to have a moment where, you know, I don't know, maybe they're looking at an autopsy and, you know, Batman's like, oh, I think a bolt cutter, you know, whatever, cut off the finger. And he's like, no, that's a, look, if you're, you know, I don't know, something like if you're, you know, as many years in the force as I am, kid, you know, that's a, whatever, a fucking, a box cutter. There, at no point does Commissioner Gordon educate Batman at all. And Batman is constantly educating the soon to be Commissioner of Police, Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
Gordon doesn't seem to know that much. I love the fact that they said, like, I think Matt Reeves said it had to be a 3-hour movie because it had to be Gordon and Batman having these conversations the whole time. But I wish that Gordon had something to give. He didn't really have much to give.
Yeah. Because, just thinking of in year one, Gordon is very, like...
He saves him at the end, doesn't he, as well?
Yeah, like, he does, And he's basically the protagonist of that book anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a bit more, like, him being active in police work a lot more in year one. And Gordon coming to grips with how unbelievably broken the city is. And not Batman telling him that, like, hey, man, this entire police force is owned by the mob. You know, he's like, what? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no way he wouldn't know that, I suppose. But yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. But overall, though, I thought it was just like, it was such a clear and really compelling dark world that they created. And it was such a take, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was.
It was really directed, you know?
It was a great Gotham. You know, would love to see them do a Robin. I think.
Yeah.
And I think they could get a Robin right. I think they know what the, I think they know the town, and I think with the city, and I think they know with turning you know, the Penguin into an HBO Max show, they are clearly looking to try and flesh out that Gotham because they got that so right. And I think they gotta just fucking do Robin. Like, just get over it. Like,
I don't get their, like, the reticence to do Robin. Like, Robin's an awesome character. Like, any of them, like Dick Grayson, Jason Todd. Jason Todd is so, like, such a great unused story for a movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, just do the death of Robin. And our Carrie Kelly, such an amazing female Robin.
Yeah.
I was always a massive fan of Robin. Even in the Batman and Robin movie, he was, like, my favorite part of the movie. Robin.
Actually, I didn't see it, but I read that. I did love that comic, the one that's based off. What are you giving the Batman? I give it a 4.
Yeah, really strong 4. Really strong 4. Yeah, very strong 4.
Okay. Before we get into some of the more popular ones, did you go see Jackass Forever in the cinema?
I didn't see it in the cinema. I saw it at a on a holiday, for, like, Airbnb thing.
What'd you think?
I thought it was really funny, yeah. I thought it was, like, really... I thought it wasn't as funny as the others, but, like, it was also, like, who cares? I love these guys. you know.
Yeah, like I think it was maybe the second best cinema trip that I had. And like, I mean, I howled and I laughed my ass off.
Yeah.
But I actually can't remember a single stunt that happened.
Yeah. Remember the first time I saw Jackass 3D in the cinema, it was like similar to you. It was just this like insane class experience just with the whole audience. And the gags are relentless and they're all brilliant, you know. Yeah. But yeah, four. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I just, but it wasn't. I wasn't like going. Yeah, I just really enjoyed it. I love those guys in particular. I love Knoxville.
Yeah, it was oddly sweet, and like they were obviously looking to kind of have a bit of a tribute to, you know, obviously to Ryan Dunn tribute, but they also wanted to seem to kind of want to cap it all off and pay respect to everything that came before. Something that kind of just turned me off the whole thing was just because I was like, I know the. In the same way that kind of like, it's weird the way that there's just so much access to information now that I know, you know, the fallout with Bam Margera is in this, you know, is in this flick. And I'm like looking out to see the scenes that Bam's in the back. Similarly to like, you know, Spider-Man and kind of the Marvel breakup or meld together. Like, I feel like sometimes I know too much and it kind of ruins a little bit of the, you know, takes a little bloom off the rose a little bit.
I just feel that in general. If you don't want to make films, then you shouldn't really know anything about it because it's just a better experience. Then, you know what I mean? My mom knows they had to reshoot some of Doctor Strange 2. You know, like
you know, he's burning the air off her about this.
No, not at all. She'd talk to me about it. You know, the entire scene that Doctor Strange 2, I'm like, yeah, and she's 5 weeks of reshoots. You know, like
you know. Well, actually, let's get on to that. Anyway, I give Jackass Forever a 4, but probably if I were to rewatch it now, I'd probably give it a 3. But I feel like I'm grading a lot on a curve these days with the current state of cinema. Yeah. A lot different is getting what probably in 2005 might have got a 2. I'm giving a 4, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Well, look, what about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, I actually rewatched it there like last week, 2 weeks ago. It's not great, man. It's not a great movie. It's and like the Sam Raimi of it, I couldn't wait to watch it because it was Sam Raimi directing it. But like, I felt like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird one because like it felt very surfacey Raimi. Like crash rooms aren't a style. Do you know what I mean? It's just the things he does. And I think it was him doing as much as he probably could with a story that was probably set in stone quite early of what had to happen. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if there's much wiggle room around the script and story. And there were certain elements, like I really liked Wanda coming out of using the reflections to get Tor Strange and the girl. That was really cool. And her
personality. That was really badass, yeah. And I even loved, like, you know, her jumping out of the shadows and looking fucking weird. And, you know, there was so many, like, individual kind of, like, isolated, like shots that you can pause, it looks like, you know, the Exorcist face, you know, and I love all that, and that's campy as fuck. Even just her walking with a weird fucking almost like weird frame rate kind of limp down,
really cool. Love all that shit. But like,
love,
I think
all that shit,
the thing that like makes a Sam Raimi superhero movie is like, it's not just those kind of mini beats that are scary, you know. Oh, Sam Raimi's making, it's going to be like Evil Dead. It's like Spider-Man 2 is great because it's an amazing personal story about Peter Parker's growth as a person, and it also happens to have amazing villain and amazing action. But you love the action because you care so much about Peter, who literally, you know, he can't swing his web, literally can't get it up, he can't swing his webs anymore because he's got such a crisis of self-confidence, and that's why that's great. Do you know what I mean? I think, and then like Evil Dead 2 and Evil Dead 1 are brilliant because Ash Williams is such a genial character who you love and don't want to see get hurt, but he's also a bit of a buffoon. So there's a certain joy in seeing him get thrown around the place. And like, it's not just, you know, because there's a zombie in it and because of the scary moments and because the camera crash zooms in now and again, doesn't make it like a full Raimi experience. It's very surfacey. You know, the story wasn't good. The Wanda's explanation, like her reason for being a villain or evil, didn't really make sense considering the ending of WandaVision.
No, that it seemed totally at odds with it. And I feel, I felt like her whole heel turn was just squandered, especially if you know what's coming up, especially if you know the X-Men aren't even in this yet, you know, like that big heel turn, I feel like should just be like, oh, this is just someone you don't cross. And then like, she should be like the kind of, you know, like they could have done two more movies, which is with Wanda being like, oh, like she's like too powerful, you know,
getting to a breaking point, like
yeah, getting to a breaking point. And but after on WandaVision, I thought like to kick off the next phase with WandaVision and leave it in, and I thought it was a great show. I thought that was it's still I think the best Disney Plus show.
Yeah, and I agree.
To get that so right and then end it in a place where you're like, oh, she's going to do whatever she can to find her kids. But then within the first 20 minutes and she's hailing down fucking fireballs, you're like, there's no coming back from this. And you know straight away that there's no coming back from this. And also, it just pisses me off as well. Like, Sam Raimi said, look, I didn't watch all of WandaVision. But like, you know.
No, did he say that?
Yeah, oh, Jesus. he says he watched the episodes that he needed to watch, but
that's my
with White Vision out there, it's just like, oh, this is just like,
yeah, I thought White Vision would stop her. I thought White Vision would stop her, like the whole,
yeah,
like the madness, like her children being scared of her is really cool. That's a really strong idea, but I thought it'd be like, Wanda, what are you doing? And her going, that voice, and then you look over and it's White Vision after downloading, I don't know, Vision's brain or something, you know.
Like, you know the way, like in, like jumping ahead a little bit, but like, I was, when I was at the end of Thor Love and Thunder, right? And sorry, there are spoilers for all this, sorry. I'll give a spoiler warning for all the movies just up top. But like, when it actually got down to the very end of it, I was like, oh, maybe Gore might actually survive and get to have time, even though, you know, with his kid, because he actually thought about it. He didn't really do anything that bad. You know what I mean? Like, kind of. I mean, kill all the gods, but like you kind of thought, oh, well, he might actually have a redeemable story. I actually thought more so that Gore might have a redeemable story than Wanda. Wanda was just such a hard heel turn that it was just... And what wound me up as well about it is, right, you look at, you know, Marcus McFeely with Endgame and they're pulling on the thread of fucking 20 flicks or whatever, 36 characters, and yet every single character acts within their own...
Yeah,
within
logic.
Exactly, within their own logic and fits the. I mean, that's why, you know, Peter Quill trying to spark out Thanos is such a kind of fucking what the fuck, because it's the one. It's the one that stands out where you're like, would he really be that stupid? And you can make the argument that he would because the amount of emotion that's going through him, he realizes the woman he loves is dead. But, you know, there are so many of these kind of leaps of faith you have to make in the movie, like Doctor Strange just like giving up Wanda's plan, you know, giving up the plan or giving up the location of America Chavez to Wanda, which is pretty stupid. Wong saying, oh, there's another Darkhold and there's a whole fucking shrine to you and I'll show you exactly how to get there, you know, like that whole, and the fact that obviously America Chavez is just going to be able to figure out a way of just opening it after, you know, a heartfelt talk from Doctor Strange. I don't know, it just seems like pretty dumb. It seems like pretty fucking stupid. And there's not that many characters at play here.
No, you know? and the title was a bit wrong, or it was a bit indicative of something that didn't happen. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't that mad, and there weren't that many multiverses. And the one you went to was like Earth, where, and the only difference was like the pizza was in balls.
Yeah, I know. You're like, and what? It's a bit. Yeah, some cool set pieces. I lapped up the Xavier shit. I did lap up the fucking Krasinski shit as well. You know?
Yeah. No, I like that. I kind of like, it looks so fake though, man. It looks so like they're clearly weren't in the same room. It's like, they're so weightless. It's like, and I'm skipping forward, but you watch, like if you watch Doctor Strange 2 and you watch Top Gun Maverick back to back, you'd be like, Jesus Christ, that is insane. Like, why do they have to film it in Atlanta on a green screen? Why can't they go outside? Do you know what I mean? Like,
but they also filmed it in the British Museum and they had that, like they were in there, you know? But then they just were like, oh, sorry, no, the fans are clamoring for a bit. Let's put in...
But they didn't shut down the Tom Cruise rumors. I was expecting Iron Man, whatever, Superior Iron Man to come out, and it'd be the Tom Cruise going, well, what's the story? And like that, I would have loved the film if that had happened. Like, even if they killed him off in 2 minutes like they did everyone else, I would have loved it. But And then at the end, when it's like, at the end of the movie, like where they reveal the third eye and it's meant to be a horrific ending. And then immediately after that is the mid-credit sequence where he's grand again. Literally like 2 minutes later and him walking down the street going, that was a bit weird. And then,
Also what pisses me off is like, all right, you got the Xavier Easter eggs. You have the Krasinski Easter egg, you know, and all these Easter eggs right now are like tasting like fucking Pound Shop Easter eggs. Like they don't taste good, you know. You're just like, oh, there is, okay. And you're like getting excited. And then at the end you see Charlize Theron and she's like, I'm Clea. And you're like, I don't really know who Clea is. Yeah, and you're like, sure. Now I have to fucking look up who Clea is, yeah, you know. Yeah. But like, I'm meant to be excited. Yeah. And we're all getting excited. Oh, you know, there's Harry Styles. He's Thanos' fucking brother. Like, fuck off.
I know. Yeah, yeah. You know? But that's the thing. I think Love and Thunder are the same kind of mid-credit scene where it's like, hey, I'm going to set you up and then you're going to come out and get the heat. You know, it's like, it's a reveal of somebody every single time. Which I guess is what they always were. I don't know. They just felt more cleaner and classy back in the day.
I'd like, even just getting into the kind of phase 5 and 6 stuff, like, is it going to be fucking, you know, Jon Snow as fucking Iron, whatever the fuck his name, or, you know, Blackheart, Black Knight.
Is it? Yeah,
him
yeah.
and Harry Styles as Thanos' brother against Kang the Conqueror. It's like,
Kang the Conqueror, I love the name. Apparently, Blade is going to be a buddy comedy with Jon Snow and Mahershala Ali.
I'll get into that.
Yeah, I think they're a weird odd pair. I think they'd work together well for some reason.
Kind of a ride along. You weren't a huge fan of No Way Home as well.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like, Jesus, good luck me getting the Marvel movie ever now saying all this. But
You don't have to.
But yeah, no, I thought it was pretty cheap. You know, I sound like such a dry shite. It's just like, you know, you're drawing on goodwill that you haven't necessarily earned. Do you know what I mean? Like, Tobey Maguire, seeing him, I was like, oh my God. Like, when he said to Otto Octavius, he's like, how are you? And then Otto asked him, how are you? And he says, trying to do better. I thought that was like amazing. That's such a Peter Parker line. You know, he's super humble and he's just like trying to be a good person despite all these powers. And they play the Danny Elfman theme. That was like the one moment where I was like, oh my God. I just killed for more of that character. But I don't know. And like, it felt like a bit like cheap wins, and like Norman Osborn saying, I'm something of a scientist myself. Like that's a meme. That's not part of a movie. It's not organic to the film. It's like they forced that to happen. And I find it's happening more and more where it's like, eat the soup. You know what I mean? Here's more of the stuff we know you want. And it's like, I thought Shang-Chi interestingly told the full story. Do you know what I mean? And I thought much of that film was really good.
Oh, I thought it was. I think it might be the best. I think it is the best flick of the phase.
Yeah, I thought he's just great. I thought a real Star Is Born performance from him.
He's incredible, and he's so funny, and he's so likable, and like serious fucking tactile action, serious stunts. I know they did them all. I watched a whole breakdown of stuntmen react, and them sliding through the fucking bus and everything like that. Aquafina's great. That's a really funny thing going on. The only thing when it went full Lord of the Rings at the end with all the dragons,
the dragon fight, yeah,
it's just isn't it insane how a fight on scaffolding is better than fights with dragons? Isn't that mad?
Because it's dealing with like kind of human scale, jumping through all the scaffolding while baiting lads in one shot trying to get to her. That was awesome. You know what I mean? Like, the dragons were beautiful, but like
it's like the dragons are there and they have to. Yeah, or you know, the other one, or the bus scene where it's like, this is speed, except I need to, you know, spark out these lads in a fucking real tight, you know, old boy fucking sequence here to get to the front of the bus just to, you know, protect all these people.
And I loved the line of dialogue that kickstarted that whole fight scene where he says in Mandarin, he says, I don't want trouble, which is like a direct reference. And it's a reference done well to Jackie Chan films, to Police Story. Because always that character, Jackie Chan, would in Police Story series would always say, I don't want trouble before absolutely annihilating a room full of lads. You know, like,
and have that face where it's like, oh, like he's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Like, I don't want this. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then he's an animal. Yeah. No, I really enjoyed Shang-Chi. I thought it was awesome, actually, to be honest.
But like, that's like, I'm totally here for that. Like Ironheart, I don't know what it is. I'm kind of excited about it because that sounds new. That sounds interesting, you know?
Yeah. Is it Don Cheadle, isn't that? Is it War Machine? So.
Oh, is it? Oh.
I think. I know. Yeah.
Oh, forget it.
Yeah, well, I liked Moon. I thought Moon Knight was good. You know, I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't get into Moon Knight. I couldn't get into Oscar Isaac's British accent, and I couldn't get in.
Your shoes, governor. Yeah, yeah.
It was so. And he was doing an impression of Russell Kane the whole time. Anyway, just to round it off, sorry, just with Doctor Strange, I gave it a 3, right? I wasn't a huge...
Yeah, I'll give it a 2, yeah.
Yeah.
I like the him turning the ghouls into a cape. I thought that was awesome.
That was cool.
I like the zombie Strange. I thought he was really cool. I thought he should have actually been a character rather than a possessed body.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Just like that kind of, you know, shuddering guy everyone underestimates who's a zombie.
But great performance. Like, great, almost like vaudeville performance by, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Animal. He is amazing actor.
Yeah,
him and the Power of the Dog, he was just unbelievable. He's just, yeah. I think he's my favorite working actor. Him and Emma Stone at the moment, yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
No, I thought just the fact that he was able to just, like, inhabit a zombie and do everything with his—that's all his face. Like, he's doing all that stuff with his face.
Super, you know, cool,
and does play very good different Stranges. But I don't know. Yeah, anyway. But also Spider-Man No Way Home. That's another example of just like, do you want me to like Doctor Strange? Because you're making him out to be really pretty fucking dumb, you know. He's all like, I'm gonna throw this kid a bone and, you know, fucking alter this universe. Like, he wouldn't. I remember seeing the trailer, being like, all right, something's up, and that's why everyone started thinking about. The fact is this, you know, is this Mephisto or is this a higher power?
Doctor Strange shouldn't do that.
Because he shouldn't do that. Or is this a Skrull operating as Doctor Strange, which maybe in the future they might, you know, it's Secret Invasion. They might, you know, backpedal on any bad decision they make and be like, it was a Skrull, you know. But I feel like that would be a good one for that. So, yeah. All right. Jurassic Park Dominion. Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I turned this shit off.
Oh, really? How far did you get into it?
Actually, do you know, there was a point where they were kind of like just, where they just met Ian Malcolm.
You turn off there.
Well, the thing is, I tried to watch it like 3 times and I kept turning it off. And I kept turning it off for the first 20 minutes. There was a couple of things that really pissed me off. One was this, like, you know, those Now This videos. And it was like basically a recap.
Oh, yeah.
That was all like, you know, now we're, you know, years into living with dinosaurs now, you know, I'm like, what? Yeah. Who would make this documentary? You know, now we're living with dinosaurs. And then to be like, and then, of course, there are rumors of a cloned girl. And I'm like, would a news source just speculate there are rumors of a cloned girl within the same thing about fucking dinosaurs living with ranchers? And then fucking Pratt started doing the hand thing. He does the hand thing 3 times in the first 20 minutes. The hand thing that means I can control dinosaurs with the hand.
Yeah. And he promises a raptor he'll get the raptor's child back. And the raptor kind of gives him a nod, like, I understand. Yeah. You know, you're like, what? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not as harsh on that film as I think it was. Like, I like the, I don't know. I thought it was a good hearted or something. I thought it was like a bad, it was very factory, you know, Jesus, nothing happened that was original in it. And they kind of call everything to the last second. And I was really disappointed it ended up on a park again. You're like, what? Come on. Mm. Like, I kind of part of me wanted to see, like, you know, tanks versus dinosaurs. But I don't know. I thought it was just like aggressively grand, you know?
Yeah. It was just kind of. But like, I just think, like, there was something, I don't know. I got something in my head, but when I was watching it, and I was just thinking, I was kind of thinking to myself, because I'll watch anything. Like, I'll watch, even if I know it's bad, even if I hear, like, I'm always excited to find out. Like, if the Batman had turned out to be absolutely shit, I probably would have been more excited about seeing it just because of the fucking sick, twisted little freak that I am, that I kind of just want to be part of the conversation. So I'm willing to watch this. But I kind of felt with this one, I'm like, no, I think I need to break the cycle on Jurassic Park 6, you know? Because I don't feel like they're doing anything with it. And I think, and I already was really pissed off, and I've talked about this so many times, people on my podcast are sick of hearing me talk about this, but there's a bit in fucking Jurassic, I think I've even said this to you as well, but it really pisses me off. There's a bit in Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom, the start of the flick, where they release the big water dinosaur out into the sea. And they do this because they're trying to sneak into the park and they leave a gate open. But in the first Jurassic World, the containment area where he is in the middle of the island, this big fucker. And now they've just changed the cartography of the map. And there was definitely, you know, an art director who said, yeah, fuck them, you know, or brought it to the director and said, just to let you know,
this has to happen.
Or just to say, like, look, can we do that? We have to come up with a better way. And the director probably was like, no one's going to notice. Or if they do, I don't care.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh man,
I don't mean to be bumming you in because you might be doing a Jurassic World movie someday.
No, but I that's interesting. I've definitely been guilty of that. Like just while making stuff, I've been like, say there's a glaring continuity issue. I'm like, if people notice that, we're not doing our jobs right. You know?
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Yeah, like, fair.
I don't know, but yeah, but that kind of shit. Yeah, that would less annoy me if like. I actually like Fallen Kingdom weirdly. I think it turns into a cool Resident Evil movie towards the end.
Yeah, I like the second half. I do like that. Yeah. And you get back to exactly the kind of elements of the tension that you got in the first, you know, the second half of Jurassic Park, you know?
Yeah.
They capitalize that. They realize going bigger is not better and they kind of strip it back. And there's an interesting element to the kind of black market dino dealings, you know? But I think they push it a little bit too far with the genetic engineering of like the perfect dinosaur. And then this movie... with genetic engineered fucking crickets, and you're like, what series is this? What am I watching? Like, what is this?
Yeah. I like what the tack they're taking with the Predator series now, where they're really simplifying what a Predator movie is, and it's back to basics in like so many ways, not just technological. And they're hiring like a really good director with that new Predator movie, who like hasn't been massively successful, but he's clearly super talented. Mm-hmm. So like, and they're letting him kind of run riot with that. And I think Jurassic probably needs something like that as well. It needs like a simplification of like, why can't you make a film about two people and a raptor in a building?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why can't that be awesome? You know, rather than, you know, I don't know, just islands exploding and shit like that. Yeah, like, come on, you know, just.
Yeah, that's like the first 20 minutes and they're in the fucking ball and like the volcano's exploding and the dinosaurs are exploding. And like in the same flick, it's like a Resident Evil flick. What would you give Jurassic Park Dominion? I have to give it an X because I didn't sit all the way through it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a 3, to be honest. Like, I didn't hate it. I actually did not hate it, no. I didn't hate it at all, really. I just kind of went, ugh, whatever. And then it was over. But I was glad I saw it because I was like, I like seeing dinosaurs. But I don't know. Yeah. It wasn't, I thought I got a bit of a bad rap. I don't think that director does many favors for himself on Twitter, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get the hate for him outside of the films. You know, and I actually really liked his Rise of Skywalker take.
And yeah, I think that same.
Would have been much better. I felt like that actually, like the Easter eggs that you're going for that is not the obvious. You're not going for like, I'll bring the Emperor back, but you got like, you know, fucking Donald Gleason is like obsessed with Jedis. You know, he's got like a Mace Windu's fucking saber and stuff like that. There's actually Chewie's stuff to metal. Do. There's also like an interesting end of, you know, of Finn's story because he has to kind of go back to the fucking stormtroopers and all that, you know. But anyway, we're not talking about that. Did you see Elvis?
No, man, no, I haven't. And like that went, I don't know why I haven't seen that because it was such a mark for Baz Luhrmann. It's amazing. A flick. Yeah, it's good. You liked it?
I thought it was brilliant. The highest compliment that I can give it is that I actually get Elvis now. I never got why anyone would like Elvis. It's not easy.
Oh, really? I was a big Elvis fan.
Were you?
Yeah. Kind of. We're not forced to listen to it, but they certainly encouraged us. And I got really into it. I love Elvis. Him and Johnny Cash are like,
big time. You know, but like that's, and I think that's the making of a good biopic is that you kind of want to, like we watched it and we immediately went home, watched all the scenes that, you know, that had featured in it, like the Christmas special, you know, watched scenes from his movies, you know, watched all the gigs that were featured in it, scenes from his, you know, his residency, and also just like the way Baz Luhrmann, like it's fucking batshit crazy. Like it's purposely discombobulating so that you're kind of confused and excited. And it's genuinely trying to replicate a feeling. And that's the whole thing it does. It just keeps trying to replicate excitement in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And every time you think that he's lost it, so he does something else that just absolutely captivates the audience. So there's a montage of all like Elvis's childhood influences from like hearing blues and hearing things from like, you know, gospel, and literally like he's passing this guy just playing a fucking blues guitar and he goes straight into like a church and he's just getting caught up in the fucking, you know, he's almost starts speaking in tongues and you're like genuinely excited, and the sound mixing of course is just perfect, and they use a lot of like contemporary music to kind of set the scene of like what Nashville would have been like, which might have felt a bit rougher or whatever, you know, or a bit more urban, and they play more, you know, urban tracks mixed in with Elvis, you know, which I know Baz Luhrmann doesn't really give a shit about kind of times when, you know, timelines when he's trying to like weave music into it, but
or just create a feeling. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it does, it's the feeling the whole time, and it's just
I mean, there's some, you know, weirdly Graceland's very, every time it goes to Graceland, it's pretty boring. And they're just like chatting shit and doing all, you know, yeah. It doesn't feel as grand just because Baz's style is so, Baz, my good friend Baz, is style
coming
is so grand.
You. Baz Ashman, yeah.
I give it a very strong 4.
Sweet,
just
yeah, no,
a little bit too long.
I got to see it, man. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, just kind of haven't had any of the time with filming. But yeah, I got to get on it.
All right, look, let's talk Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, baby.
I would say I saw this at 1 o'clock in the day, and it was probably the most excited I've been in a cinema since Endgame. Like, it was just fucking edgier seat stuff. I thought it was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I thought it was, oh, man. Like, I got a bottle of water going in, and when the movie was over, I noticed I hadn't, not only hadn't I not drank from the bottle of water, I hadn't opened it. Like, it was just, it was just like heaven of a movie. It was, and like that last 40 minutes was like you were saying, like the most adrenalized I've been in the cinema since, I would say, like probably since The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
You know, just pure with like Maverick and the lads going down the kind of the tunnel to get to. And I love the way the first half of the mission, they complete that kind of without a hitch. But then the second they go over the hill, all the missiles fire at once.
Yeah.
And then they start popping flares and everything goes to shit. I was like, man, this is just incredible stuff. It's so dramatic.
But you know? I couldn't get over how aware I was of the space every single time they were doing anything. I knew exactly where they were. I knew exactly where they were in fucking 3 dimensions. Like, you know, you compare that to some action scenes, and especially when it's CG. But like even the original Top Gun, which it's a better film. It's better than Top Gun. Like,
yeah, I mean, which is a mad achievement, you know.
Yeah, but like obviously you've got to be very grateful for the, you know, the original editing, which I watched Top Gun beforehand, and the editing is incredible. You know, I do think the original Top Gun, Tom Cruise is a fucking freak, and he's actually kind of a loser, and Val Kilmer is so right. He is so right to like take him down a peg, because he is totally reckless. He follows birds into the jacks after them, you know. He does so much like weird shit, and Maverick, he's cocky, and he's wrong.
He's such a prick in it,
such a prick. And the idea that Iceman was some bad guy, I just can't wrap my head around. But like,
yeah,
you know, and I love all the new cast in it. I thought they're all fucking brilliant.
They're all and I still remember the call signs, like Hangman and Rooster and stuff like that. Like,
Hangman's brilliant. Hangman might be my VIP. I just think it's a serious line to walk to be a kind of villain and kind of. Like, you're kind of on side with him the whole time, and you're like, oh, that was a bit harsh, but hey, you know, I'm sure Rooster can take it. You're never really like, this guy's such a douche, you know?
Mm. And he gets probably one of the biggest cheer moments in the movie. Yeah. Because I was like, I had fully suspended my sense of disbelief by the end. When Maverick takes out the F-26, I was like, oh, this is incredible. And then when they ran out of ammo and then the last F-26 comes out of nowhere, I was like, they have nowhere to go. Yeah. This is it. You know, like, this is it for Maverick. Like,
You would never think.
Yeah. And he's like, hello, hello, pilots. This is your savior speaking.
Yeah.
I love all that. So good.
But and like, I got super emotional when, like, you know, Rooster's playing the piano and, you know, he's thinking back and he's like, this is the fucking kid. This is the same kid. His kid just loved his dad. No wonder. You get totally why. You know,
sure, like the ending when like, or not the ending, when Rooster isn't going through the thing fast enough and he doesn't know what to do. And then he just says, talk to me, dad. That was so heartbreaking. I was like, oh, God. And like, if Maverick saying it at the start, saying, talk to me, Goose, I was like, suddenly like, oh, my God, I love Top Gun. You know what I mean? It kind of flashes you back to you really loving that movie where he said, talk to me, Goose, all the time. You're like, yeah, I thought it was amazing. And it just like really amazing. And Jennifer Connelly was so like, they created a sense in that relationship that like Maverick has probably always, he's just terrified of being in love with her.
Yeah.
And that is kind of like, they don't have many scenes together, but there's so much depth to how they perform together.
So much depth. You know? Swear that, I mean, I know there's a few mentions of her in the original Top Gun, but you really do feel like, oh, this is like, this is like the end of a trilogy between these two. Like, it feels like they've had so much chemistry, and it's like maybe the best chemistry I've seen Tom Cruise have.
Yeah, it was so warm and lovely. Like even their when he bails out the window, so the kid doesn't find him, and the kid sees Maverick, and she just goes, "Don't run out again." Do you know what I mean? Like, because she like, just give it immediately implying that my mom really cares about you.
Yeah,
and when he arrives in the Admiral gear with the white suit, the night before the mission and they hug on the beach. I was like, oh God, like you're totally gone. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to come back.
But also to be the perfect Lego sequel in terms of reclaiming the beats and getting every beat better, you know?
I read this interview with Christopher McQuarrie and who was a writer and exec producer on it. And he's like such a hardcore story guy. He's such an amazing interview. He's obsessed with stories work. And he was saying, it made this interesting point that legacy sequels often fail because they don't show why this person deserves a legacy.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And I thought that just that bit in Maverick when they get shot down, him and Rooster, and the only way out was an F-14.
Mm.
And they keep hyping up how dangerous the fifth generation fighter pilots are.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Maverick versus not one, two of them in an F-14. And then you realize why Maverick is Maverick.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, holy shit, this guy can fly.
Yeah.
You know, like when he takes out one of them and he gets into a dogfight with the other, but drags him low so his radar won't work. And oh, it's just like movie heaven. It was.
But like, how as well do you shoot it where I know you're seeing obviously the timer go down and how many seconds, you know, they're doing the practice flight and they keep practicing. They're trying to get the time down and down and down, you know, and Maverick takes his fucking flight, he's not even supposed to be in there, does it in record time. But the way they're able to cut it and edit it so it looks like this is the cleanest flying you've ever seen in your life, just because you've seen how they've done it previously. And like, how do you shoot? I don't know how. Is Tom Cruise here to save cinema?
He said, I'm watching all the making of it after I saw the movie, and he said, you can't fake G-force.
Mm.
And so he goes, so when you see me nearly passing out, I'm nearly passing out because I didn't really understand what G-force was. And it's the weight of your body. You feel the weight of your body. So imagine nine of you lying on top of you.
Yeah.
That's what he's feeling when he's at 9 Gs. And it's just awesome, man. But yeah, no, like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just real effects, real photography, real characters, the time taken to like craft an amazing story. And it's not like, I like the way it wasn't about anything else other than telling a class story. Do you know what I mean? Like the enemies aren't named.
No,
it's not. It's kind of weirdly not a political film. Like it's not. They don't specify what the country they're in or anything like that. It's a vessel to have him kind of become self actualized by the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought it was absolutely magic. You know.
I still only give it a 4.5 for some reason.
Yeah, are you 4.5?
I mean, it is a 5-star flick. I probably should change that.
No. I'm 5 out the door.
That's my
big 5.
Yeah. All right, look, Thor Love and Thunder I saw recently. I liked Thor Ragnarok. I really did like Thor Ragnarok. I couldn't believe the lols. I couldn't get over it. You know, like that feeling of just delight didn't get old, you know. On further rewatches it kind of has, but I remember the initial first time seeing it, just like, I actually can't believe what I'm seeing here, and feeling the balance of the silly and the serious I thought worked particularly well. I did think that Cate Blanchett kind of got let down as a character, if you're going to use fucking Cate Blanchett. I thought it was a bit of a but I don't know if this one quite gets that mix of the silly and the sincere, you know. I don't know if it gets quite right.
There's nothing wrong with being honest, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was maybe the worst film I've seen in a few years.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was like dreadful. Yeah,
mm.
I never wanted to punch a film before.
Yeah.
Not everything needs a joke. Do you know what I mean? Like, not everything needs to be funny.
I thought 70% of the gags didn't land, and I also thought that I became quite exhausted and unnerved that there was going to become another one around the bend at any second. It stopped me from investing fully into what was happening.
They were half written. Like, they weren't even jokes, though. Like, they were... I think it was probably the dangers of carte blanche, you know what I mean? It's like... it's the dangers of having massive levels of success and everyone telling you you're amazing for years.
Mm.
You're like, well, if I'm amazing, then maybe I can just half-arse this one. It was... Yeah, that was really bad. It was kind of directionless. Very, very long. It felt very long, even though it's shorter than Ragnarok, which is mad.
It felt really bloated. It felt like there was, it would get to a moment where they'd have to have these kind of heart-to-heart conversations, and it seemed to be like set piece joke, set piece joke and then heart-to-heart, and it seemed to just be like looping in this kind of, you know, check in with the kids, check in with this, check in with this. It just felt very bump, bump, bump by the beat, and it felt a little bit... And also, I didn't know why anyone was doing anything. It was very quick, because there were so many jokes in it. It was a very quick, now we have to do this. And you're like, to get on to, now we're on a fucking rainbow bridge going looking for gore, like, you know? Now we're on the way to Olympus or whatever.
Well, I think if Gore doesn't kidnap the children, Gore's the good guy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I would be like, I would kill all those gods as well. They're terrible people. You know what I mean?
Did you read Jason Aaron's Thor? That it's... It
no, Mighty Thor. No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
I'd highly recommend it. It's incredible in the comics, like, because he just fucking despises the gods, and you don't even see them have the same level of hubris, but like, he just believes that, yeah, it's the same kind of origin story, you know, of him and him having a child and just being, you know, or the child dying. And then what actually happens in the comics is two gods end up, they're having this massive intergalactic fight, and they just, you know, comet down into the ground, and one of the gods is dying and has the necro sword, and the god is like, please save me, and he's all like, save you, after, you know. And he also makes like the personal decision to then kill all the gods. It isn't like, I'm a baddie because I touched this baddie sword, you know, like it is in the film. Yeah, like, he makes like a concrete decision. And he's also really intelligent, and it actually takes place across like three generations. Like, this guy has been evading Thor for hundreds of years.
Oh, that's cool.
It even goes into the future. But yeah, I also thought the needle drop moments didn't hit. And I'm like, how do you fuck up Guns N' Roses? Like, I felt like this isn't cool. Like, every time there was an action scene, I'm like, but this isn't a cool thing that's happening, you know? Apart from the kids at the end, I thought that kind of got me where, you know, that was a good, like, actual needle drop moment where the kids all have, again, but spoilers.
When has Thor ever been able to give his powers to somebody?
Like,
is that just the lightning bolt? I didn't really fully understand what was happening there.
That's, again, just a suspend disbelief to have something a bit rad.
Well, like, what you were talking about, like, the logic of the characters, where Wanda, it just kind of, I don't know, I've never seen him do that or talk about that or reference that ever.
Maybe because they're Asgardian, you know. Somehow they can.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
You know, but I don't know.
It kind of cheapens the power of Thor, though, no? I don't know.
It does, like, he speaks into fucking Stormbreaker, says, light as a feather, stiff as a board, or whatever riddle he has to do. It was good to see Natalie Portman back. I'd probably watch a whole flick of them as a rom-com.
Yeah, that was fun. That was all fun. Yeah.
But
it was fun, but it was ruined by fucking the Rockman's narration. You're like, shut up!
You know? Yeah.
I don't know.
It was, because those jokes weren't funny. Like, they weren't. No. And it was kind of a bit too... I think Taika Waititi's... I mean, I love Hunt for the Wilder People, and I did like Ragnarok. I liked Jojo Rabbit. You know, I didn't like it a tremendous amount. You know, I think he has good taste. But I think this was... could have been maybe a bit of reins put on by the Marvel machine on this one.
Or like, you know, written. Yes. I thought, like, I thought Christian Bale was deadly, but he's an entirely different film. You know, like, he's given us socks in a really interesting character, like, super intense performance as a really interesting villain. But when he's not on screen, it's like goofy jokes that aren't really funny with, like, and it's not, I don't know. Yeah, I thought it was really bad, man. Yeah, it was really disappointing because I really like Ragnarok. I was a big fan of that. I think it's like, it's dangerous for people to say you're a genius for years. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, maybe I am one, you know?
I mean, I still would welcome back another Thor with open arms, and it looks like, you know, we probably will get another one. You know, it's probably, you know, Chris Hemsworth has essentially handcrafted
he's awesome.
The most likable character in the MCU, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets the balances perfect, but maybe there needs to be more of, you know, a Hulk there who is actually going to talk back to him. But it seems to be everyone is kind of looking at him, and then they look at the screen and go, oh, Thor... You know,
yeah. Like, I thought Infinity War was like the best balance. I thought, like, he was like, he was like melancholic, and he had gallows humor because he had been through so much shit.
Yeah,
you know, like everything wrong had happened. Yeah, but yeah, man, yeah, bad one. That's a one from me.
See, I give it a 3 because I still laughed a lot, and I thought, actually, two of those are being propped up by fucking Russell Crowe.
Yeah, my favorite actor of all time.
He was absolutely incredible in it. He was just like, And I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, he's being Greek. Like, he's doing a Greek voice.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I couldn't believe he doubled down on it. Well, that was incredible.
He doubled down on it.
Well, look, I think that's a nice, tidy little wrap up. Are there any other flicks you're looking forward to this year? Obviously, Jordan Peele's Nope. Is there anything else we should watch out for? Nope.
Hang on, let me see. Sorry. I do. I was thinking about this earlier. Oh, a little film called We Are Not Alone.
You!
Hey! That'll be on. I'm actually not allowed to say what streaming service is on. But I'll tell you after you stop recording.
Yeah, cool, great.
I don't know. Yeah, man, because I saw the Grey Man, thought that was bad. No, not good. Oh, I'm looking forward to Pearl, which is the sequel to X, which was X was awesome.
Oh, I've heard horror, X was great. Yeah,
little horror movie it. By Ty West. Love Ty West. He's such an interesting filmmaker. Yeah, and the X is awesome, man. If you haven't seen it, you're in for a treat, man. It's really nasty, and really like it really goes for it. You know, it's about kind of taboo subject matter, but it's a super game cast. Mm. Has a bit of Texas Chainsaw Massacre in there as well. It's really good.
That sounds badass. I've heard a lot of great things. Fergal, is there anything you'd like to plug at this time? Of course, your flick coming out at the end of the year.
Well, I can't announce that. Yeah, I can't announce the date. Yeah.
Sure.
I think I can't. But that's coming out at the end of the year.
Great.
Hopefully, all going well. You never know. Shit happens. So.
Great. And Nova Jones as well this year?
Yeah. They are finishing a 107-day schedule right now. They're Jesus on their last Christ. Week. Yeah, they've been filming since March. I got to direct 3 episodes from season 2, which was a delight. And they're such the best people to work with, that cast. So much fun. And so that, I think season 2 of that is out at the end of the year in October, I would feel. And then, just working on this new sitcom now, and that'll be out in February, I think.
Brilliant. So. Well, yeah. Fergal, thank you very much, brother. Thanks for this 2022 roundup. We should do it again.
Yeah, I hope it didn't hurt my career opportunities in the future going forward.
I'll cut the hard shit out.
Okay.
You'll be back for 2023?
Yeah, man. Let's do it. Big time. You know me.
All right. Cheers, all brother. Right. Thank you very much.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.